Okay. And I do show it is 3 o'clock. Kyla, do you want to go ahead and get us started?
Sure, let's call the meeting to order at 3 o'clock. Could we have a roll call, please?
Okay. Kyla Waltermeyer.
Here.
Jenna Dower.
Here.
Lauren Irwin.
Here.
Alyssa Henkel.
Here.
Sarah Hill.
Here.
Cami Kom. Janet McAllister. And I saw a note from Laura that she was having audio trouble, so we'll give her just another minute. And I see Cami that we're just doing the roll call, Cami, if you want to just confirm that you're here. Okay. Can you hear us, Cami?
I can hear you typing, Cammy. I bet if you. I don't think she can hear us, I think is the issue.
And Laura, when you are, when you have audio.
Nobody's working. Don't rush.
What do you mean? But I can't hear, so I don't know what they're doing.
All right. Well, we'll keep moving on while those folks are getting things sorted out. First up on our agenda is approval of minutes from the March 27th, 2023 meeting.
Okay, so we can entertain a motion.
I move to accept those minutes as presented.
Thank you, Sarah.
I'll second that motion.
Thanks, Alyssa. Any discussion on the motion?
Okay, then we'll go ahead and do another roll call. Kyla Waltermeyer,
Yes.
Jenna Dower,
Yes.
Lauren Irwin,
Yes.
Alyssa Henkel,
Yes.
Sarah Hill,
Yes.
and Cami Kom, if you can hear us. Okay, no. And Laura Picato, if you can hear us.
I can hear you now. Can you hear me? Yay.
And did you hear that there was just a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting?
I did get that part. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks everyone. Next up is a share update.
Well, the biggest news for share, I'll start with the easy thing, is that we are going to be doing some scheduled maintenance on October 9th. That's a Monday, that evening, which of course is a day we've selected because it is a holiday for some of our locations, though we understand not all. So we're going to be doing some communications in advance of that meeting, including Danielle is going to put a note on Cloud Library because anything that's coming through a SIP 2 connection, anything that's authenticating through Polaris will not be available during that time. We are also going to be using some of our other communications channels, like our rained out text messaging. We'll send out an email in advance of that. It was just a heads up that that is coming. Troy, do you have anything that you wanted to add for the upcoming maintenance?
No, just that whenever you log on to Polaris, from this point forward for the rest of the week, you'll get a message reminding you of the maintenance period and to check the share website for any more details. And we're also going to put a banner on the pack itself so that your patrons will be aware of the outage and so they know ahead of time as well.
Thanks, Troy. And so, one of the other things that we have been working on that is just in the last few weeks, so we had been working on share fee increases, including a town hall where some of our members got to share some feedback in regards to those increases, which do include an increase to Cloud Library. As part of that, we're still working on that, but Danielle and I have had some conversations about how that might work. And what we had found, the majority of our members tend to be our smallest library or smaller libraries. And so what we were finding is the increases were hitting them a little bit harder for Cloud Library specifically for an increased scale than our larger libraries. And so one of the suggestions was to actually have a certain percentage going towards just an administrative fee to go to our shared collection. So for example, instead of charging an extra $100 at the lowest end, it would actually go to the higher end, but part of that would go back into the shared collection fee as she's managing to those funds to balance the collection. So she has more money to have available for those holds reductions specifically. And so what we did is we actually used targets to try to estimate how much we would need if we wanted to bring the hold times to 10 items, 7 items, or holds queue, I'm sorry, to 7 items or 5 items. And so with that, that's how we were kind of looking at that. But of course, we are still in the talking stages and working with the Share Finance and Policy Committee on what that's going to look like. For any of you that may have attended, we did have a series of town halls with the Share Finance and Policy Committee to discuss the need for these increases and what that was going to look like with members. We got some great feedback of some suggested changes. The biggest question is still the idea of keeping our fee structure the same as it is now, which is, you know, pay per use kind of a idea where you pay for the services you use. Just to give you a little bit more information, though, there are only 36 public libraries that do not use Cloud Library. And then there's also the idea of wrapping in Aspen. And so that would be an add-on service. But one of the things that started getting us thinking about this had been the idea, especially from the IHLS Board of Trustees, of not wanting to see us move more and more to a have and have not situation where you got the larger libraries who can afford the bells and whistles, they get the better service. And so that was a really large concern when we first started talking about Aspen and how that has been when we have started those discussions. And so we had this idea that we started kind of jokingly calling the nuclear option, where it'd just be one fee, that it would be the fee for everything included, and that would actually spread the cost among all of our members. So if you haven't seen that yet, all of the information is on the Share website. Like I said, we had town halls, and I specifically invited all of the library directors that would be hardest hit by those changes to discuss it. And one of the things that I think the Finance Committee is going to be looking at moving forward is possibly some type of increase cap and how to do more incremental increases more frequently. And so that's some of the things that we got back from these town halls. And so we'll be continuing to work on that in November. But I wanted to give everybody an update where we were with that, because at some point we might be looking at making adjustments to the percentages and how those are allocated. So for example, the amount going to the PPU budget versus the platform fee versus the collection fees that are split among the libraries based on the percentage of their overall fee. So, Danielle, did I miss anything when we're talking about the fee increases for Cloud Library specifically? Okay. Okay.
Cassandra, I have some feedback from a few members from last week's MEPL meeting. Mm-hmm. Not specifically anything, like everyone I think realizes that the fees are going up and there's not really much to be done about that. But one member in particular was looking at a rather significant increase, because this past year they had put a lot of time and effort into getting grants to supplement their budget. And so their reported income for the year was higher than in prior years. And they're being allocated fees based on that one-off situation, or so it's being interpreted. So is this a situation where maybe I'm just not aware of, is there like a 3-year rolling average of
fees, no,
or is it really just the prior years?
It really is the prior year as reported on the IPLAR. And so that, but as you had said, grants specifically, we don't include grants, fines or fees, grants, capital funds. None of that is included as part of the revenue that we use to calculate. It's 8.1 through 8.4 on the IPLAR. The only exception is it does include the per capita that you may get and an equalization grant if you've applied for that. And there's only a handful of libraries that are eligible for that. And so it really is based on your tax draw. And how your fees are calculated is based on a tax draw. And so with that, I'd be happy to discuss that with the library that expressed that concern. If you are comfortable sharing, or if you want to recommend that they reach out to me to discuss it, so I can show them exactly how it's calculated. But it is anything that's reported on the IPLAR specific to like property taxes, for example.
I'll follow up with you that after the meeting. But kind of related to that is, has there ever been any discussion about doing a 3-year average? Because, I mean, that's how our SS valuation is put together. It's supposed to help even out any significant jumps or losses so that we can have more time to absorb those things. Any possibility of looking at something like that?
We've never done that before. That's certainly something that we could look at, but the actual implementation for so many libraries would be extremely challenging because it would be adding the, so it's based on the IPLAR data that's coming through and then doing the additional calculations, and then you times that by, you know, 476 times the locations. So it would be pretty unwieldy. It's not to say that it couldn't be done, but I'm doing this all via Excel spreadsheet. And so I don't know that that's something, doing a 3-year average, it would benefit some libraries, but it would actually hurt some libraries as well. So I don't know. We just don't necessarily see those huge jumps. What happens is that if there is a jump, it's usually between like 390,000 and then you get to 402,000. So you switch from the scales. And in that instance, what we do is we usually offer a grace period. So we understand that you didn't budget for that this past fiscal year. And so I would generally offer to just have them stay at their existing rate for one more year and give them a 1-year grace period to make sure that they're budgeting for the higher amount. It's something I can definitely consider. Doing the actual calculations it's already kind of challenging to get all the algorithms in for the annual agreements, because it's a very limited time that I have to do those. And then there's also the auditing for the financial auditing that we do with IHLS and the finance department, that they bring in a company called Scheffel Boyle. I would have to talk to them to see if that's like an allowable process for doing that, because generally they want to see it tied to a specific number, like you're on this fee based on this number, if that makes sense. One of the things that we have discussed was having a cap so that no one library would be charged higher than a certain percentage, which that's still to be determined. So what it might do is say, let's just say for the sake of argument, it's 15%. And if you're showing that your fee increase would be like 30%, for example, everybody would be charged up to 15% the first year. The second year, everybody would be charged just based on their reported revenues with the new scale that second year. So that is something that we've considered. I need to actually go and do the calculations for that to see what the revenue would look like, because we do have a target of how much we need to hit each year. And there has been a lot of consideration of maybe possibly using our reserve for our reserve fund to meet any deficits at the end of the year. We wouldn't do it until we know exactly how much would be our deficit. But that's something that we're going to discuss internally with the finance department and see what is the best path moving forward. So. Okay, does anybody else have any questions about the fee increases? Feedback, Cammy?
You have probably already thought of this, but if everyone chose the cheaper version for them, you know how you had the two different, not choices, but it's like if you went this route or this route, your fee would increase a certain amount. If everybody chose the cheapest route for themselves, does that cover what you need?
Well, the reason that we are not doing that is because for the inclusive model, the pricing is spread out between everyone. And if we allowed them to choose the cheaper, then it wouldn't be. So that's unfortunately why we're not allowing a selection.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that was something that we had discussed, but I think that the probably would be better with some type of just cap that, you're not going to exceed a certain percentage of an increase. And then possibly doing some type of like a trigger system. I don't know how to say that better, but where if you get to a certain benchmark, that would trigger an automatic increase. And then we just communicate that. So we wouldn't actually have to redo our scales every single time.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. The next step in that process is to actually send another email. The directors, I had sent an email asking for input before we had data. And so as the data is now available, we are going to do a follow-up email, basically that same survey, to try to gauge if members would prefer to have the traditional, what I'm calling the traditional model, where it's just a a la carte service, you pay for what you need, or if they'd prefer the inclusive model, because that was part of the objective for the town hall. I don't think we really have a clear idea of what our members want at this point. So that's going to be my next step. So I'll probably be working on that in the next few weeks. Okay, I see Laura, you have a question?
I was just curious. So from my understanding, the way that we got to kind of the big jump on the fee is that we share, I mean, has not been increasing their fee, particularly because of the pandemic and when things were kind of unstable. So would it be beneficial to share that kind of with people to let them know why there hasn't been an increase in the last 3 years and why now it's a bigger increase because of that?
We did try to put that in the language on the information that was put out on the SHARE website of that it has been 4 years. With that, though, that was not the only reason. That was a very good reason, but we do try to only do increases every 3 years. And so we actually went to 4. The reason we didn't do it sooner was because we have benchmarks in place. And we did that because we didn't want to be sitting on a pile of cash that we aren't needing or using. And so our benchmark was to have between 3 to 6 months of operating cash at the end of the fiscal year, based on the following year's budget. So Rhonda, our finance director, does this really great calculation for us every month that we have, 3.6 months of revenue. And so left in the year, however many months it will be based on the average cost. One of the things that after the town halls I realized was somewhat challenging is, we're saying that we're anticipating with our forecasts of deficit of about $240,000. That is a lot of money. It sounds like a lot of money, but that is not even 2 months of expenses for us. So putting that in perspective, I didn't really do that. So that is something that I do want to address as we move forward, as we continue the conversation.
I think it might also benefit when you do that to, I love how you had the math on what the increases would be, but for us, we looked at what percentage of our budget is that increase. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that made it a lot more palatable because it was, it looks like a huge increase when you're just looking at the dollars. But when you looked at the percentage of your budget, it was not quite as bad. You know, does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. And I do have that data because one of the things that I was looking at, when you get to the libraries that we identified as the smaller revenue libraries, that they're like 10%, 16%, 27%. And then you get down to the larger libraries and it's 1%. And that is where we really wanted to make sure that we were balancing it appropriately. Yeah. I see Jenna, you have a question?
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. I thought maybe it could be helpful to include, and maybe I just didn't read this, I apologize if you've already done it, but include with each of the models what exactly it involves. So are you getting them, like, include Cloud Library Aspen, the basic mobile app, just really list it out for people, what they're getting for that value.
Okay. Yes, I could certainly do that. Okay. All right. Are there any other questions or comments on that portion of the update? I do want to turn it over to members of the SHARE team. If Dina, for example, do you have anything that you'd like to add for updates?
excuse me. I really don't have anything. Just like we talked about earlier, we have the upcoming maintenance on October the 9th. And I think that's all I have that I can think of anyway.
Okay. And Jen, do you happen to have anything?
Thanks, Cassie. The only thing I have is that all of the Aspen cleanup lists have gone out to public libraries. I'm working on getting the school libraries list updated and getting them sent out. If you have any questions at all about any of those, feel free to reach out. I'm more than happy to pull the reports, go through things, and help you fix anything. I'm here to help however I can. Thanks.
Thanks, Jennifer. And Jace, do you have anything that I've maybe forgotten?
Just a reminder that we're going to be at ILE this next coming week, so the 1st through the 3rd of October, and then ILA. We'll have booths at both of those, so stop by. And then at ILA also, if you are going or if you have staff going, there's going to be a party to celebrate eRead Illinois. It's the 10th anniversary for that. And that'll be on Monday the 24th from 5:30 to 7. It'll be in the North Terrace. There'll be more information coming out too about that. For location and everything like that. So if you have any questions, just let us know.
Thank you. All right. And so moving on, we will go ahead and go to new business and the share resource sharing specialist update. That's Danielle. Danielle, thank you.
Thanks, Cassie. So I wanted to start off by just giving you guys an update of where we're at with the hold ratio in Cloud Library. Starting off in this fiscal year, that was a big push on my end to get those hold ratios down, because last year it was a real work because they were at big numbers. You know, we're talking over 15, 20 hold ratios. Trying to get them about to 10, which is ideally when Cloud Library was started, where we wanted that number to be at. So as of this morning, before I did my ordering for the week, we had about 18 titles that were over that 10 amount. Most of them were an 11 holds ratio, a couple 12s, and then one 13 and one 17. And that's because those were new titles added to the collection. So there was only one copy of them. So we just needed to add an additional title just to bring that holds ratio down again. So everything else is now at a 10. Again, that's going to fluctuate as just more titles are added into the collection. I will say, though, that the bulk of the spending has just been staying on top of those holds ratios for the most part. Occasionally I've added some new stuff, but I've really been relying on libraries that have carts to add titles into the collection. They've really been helping us out, and have been, you know, great contributors to the collection as I'm managing those holds and adding additional titles for what they add and buy for the collection. So big shout out to those libraries. Some of you guys are here, some of them aren't. So I really, really appreciate them and all that they do for the Cloud Library collection. Last year, Cassie and I met with a Hoopla rep, and they discussed beta testing that they were doing for a consortium-based model. So I did a checkup with another rep again to see kind of how that was going, and they let me know that it was live. So I got a bit more information from that rep on how that live model is going for consortium. And they said it's going great. They have two different models that they currently do. You can do one, you can do two, you could do or one or the other or both. So the first one is their instant model, which people are the most familiar with. So it's that like our PPU, no holds, no waits thing. And then they have a flex model, which is kind of our big thing with Cloud Library. It's the one copy per one user. So you buy titles, you add them to your collection. There are holds times. So you can do one of those models, or you can actually do them both. It's up to the consortium to decide what they want to do with that. I had another meeting with them later last week to see the report side of things. I did this just to gather information if down the road we do decide that we possibly want to switch platforms. That's what these whole meetings were about, because I am interested in what they offer. Hoopla is a big one. I know people are interested in Hoopla. Some pros: if some of our member libraries already have Hoopla, they can be linked to the consortium Hoopla and basically get two collections, essentially. So they can keep their Hoopla account if they want to. And then if they want to pay a small extra fee and get additional titles to the consortium model, they can do that. That's up to them. What else did they do? What else did they say? A con on it is they don't yet have the capability for scoping. So that's not going to appeal to the schools because they do not yet have the data. They're working on it, they said, but they do not currently have the data to set those audiences. So adult, YA, juvenile, so we can set those limitations to do the scoping for the schools. So that's a con. I do like that you can do the switch. A pro, there is no platform or annual fee. Unlike Cloud Library, we pay a platform fee every year right now. There's no fee with Hoopla. You don't have to pay anything like that with them, which I found super interesting. Trying to think of what else. There was a lot of information I went over with them. So if I think of anything else in the meantime while I'm running down some stuff, I'll let you know. Jenna, do you have a question?
Hi. Yes. I was actually just talking to my coworker about this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you refresh my memory? Why did we get away from Overdrive? Was it fees? Was it content? Because we migrated everything from Overdrive to Cloud Library. But why?
Well, that was before me, so I'll let Cassie handle that question because I am not sure on the history with that.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happened with Overdrive is there actually were when there were several library systems, there were multiple Overdrive consortia. And when we merged, they would not allow us to merge that collection. And so that kind of morphed into My Media Mall turned into Digital Library of Illinois. Rolling Prairie became Libraries on the Go, which now is again Rolling Prairie. And so they kind of remained their separate individual consortia, but that was never part of the eRead program. So eRead was that state grant that morphed into Cloud Library. And so that's the history of that. And we have talked to Overdrive a couple of times since then, and I don't see the value of adding another Overdrive consortia because they still have the same rules that they will not allow you to switch between consortia. They will not allow collections to merge. And so making it even a little bit more complicated is they also no longer allow schools. And so there are a couple, there's more than a couple. There are quite a few libraries that were grandfathered in that were schools for Digital Library of Illinois, but they don't allow schools to join. They have a new product called Sora. So it's just kind of a...
messy.
It's messy. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we've just kind of made the decision that we would not be working with them as a share consortium. Okay. If that makes sense.
It does. Thank you. That's unfortunate because I really like Libby. I really do. But yeah, I can see there's a lot of cons that wouldn't be a good fit.
Yep.
Thanks. You're welcome. The other pro that I was trying to think of was that there also is no fee to transfer everything that we do currently own and have purchased in Cloud Library over to the Hoopla platform. So any title that we do own there, there's no fee to transfer those titles over. So that was also interesting. I think that there's still a long way to go. One of the big stops, obviously, is going to be the scoping for us because we don't want to push those schools out. And I think that that's an important factor. If they're working on it, I think that that's great. So I'll be interested to see kind of how far along they come with that. Laura.
Hi.
Hi.
So I just had a question about, so we have Hoopla and it's a little bit different from Cloud and Libby in the fact that like new really popular authors, those big ones are not available in Hoopla, at least for us. Is that something, how would we deal with that? Because you're not going to get like the latest Patterson or Nora Roberts. You're going to get the older ones maybe, but not the new ones.
Do you have the instant model or do you have the flex model?
We have the instant model. So it's on demand and all that.
Yeah. So the rep was talking to me about how on average with the instant model, I think it's like six months, sometimes 12 months, depending on how big the author is and the publisher and all of that to become available on instant. If it's flex, it's different. If you buy the title, it's going to be available for you to purchase. So ideally, if, you know, hypothetically, if we were to go this route, I would think that we would likely do both models or at least start out with the flex and then maybe add the instant just so we can get all of those titles and transfer everything that we do already own over to that platform. So those titles would be available to us.
That makes sense. So are you saying that with the flex model, you can actually go in and purchase the new whatever release?
Yes. And it works just like Cloud Library or Libby does with the one copy per one user.
Okay.
Yep.
What about the price point? Is it pretty much
that
the same?
That I do not know. That I would still have to get with them and see. I saw the report side. I did not see the purchasing side of things. So I don't know price point wise how their prices compare to you know, what I've seen on Cloud Library side.
Awesome. Thanks. Yep.
You're welcome.
If I may, mm-hmm. Decatur Public Library, we migrated from Overdrive to Hoopla Flex. We already had Hoopla Instant and we decided to go with both models simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, an outcry of the minority of people who didn't like it primarily because they couldn't use their paper whites anymore.
Yes. That's the other downside of it. Yeah.
Right. But the majority of everybody loves it and our use has gone through the roof. We are circulating more items than we did previously with Libby and Hoopla Instant. And happened, you know, like all this year. In fact, so being a big library, we had about $23,000 dedicated to Hoopla Instant. And in May, we were already 119%.
Wow.
Of our budget. So it has finally come to that point where we need to redirect our money from print to electronic because it's the best problem for us to have.
Yep.
It's been very successful. We're very happy with it. I would not look back to Libby.
That's great. And I bet a lot of it has to do with that everything's under the one app and people don't have to switch, if I had to guess, because people like that. They don't like having a bunch of apps sometimes.
No, you
I don't
have
mind
one.
It personally, but yeah.
You have one, you go look for one thing, and while you're looking, you find all these others.
All the others.
Even if you have to wait for the book you want on Flex, you have other books you can have right now.
Instantly. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that's my two cents on that.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Alyssa. All right. So then I had another meeting with a Blackstone Publishing rep, because Blackstone Publishing has rolled out kind of their own instant model strictly for audiobooks. And it is only Blackstone Publishing titles. And it is truly a instant model, and you pay a flat fixed rate annually because they can do that, because it is their own titles. So I thought it was interesting. He was trying to see if it's something that we want to do as a consortium. I think they've got some consortium that do it. I don't necessarily think at the moment it'll work for us, especially for schools, because again, they don't have the ability to do the scoping part of things. I'm not sure it's worth the cost it would probably be. But it was great to get some information from them. It's ideal that it's a one-time cost versus, you know, every time it gets used, you're getting charged for it. They do have some popular titles on there. They do kind of have some of those more backlist titles that people were like, those cozy mysteries, the romance titles, things like that. But I'm not quite sure. It could potentially be something that we go ahead and promote to members. It could be something, if we wanted to see if people wanted to do a group purchase for it, because he said that that could be available and he would be willing to look into that too, if libraries were interested in going in and doing a group purchase. Pricing is based off of total circulation for the year. That's how they base off pricing, and it's based on a sliding scale. So wherever your total circulation fell within a year, that's where it is. And he says they don't ever really go back and check. So once ever, you know, whatever stats you send him, that's kind of where you fall in the category and what you're charged. So just wanted to give you guys some information on that. And I plan to get with Cassie at some point to share the meeting I had with him, because that was just last week too. And then Cassie went over the fee increases that have kind of been discussed and what we've been doing with that. And I think that is all I have currently for my updates. Does anyone have any questions? Oh, I do want to add paper use. Still very popular. Even though we raised it, we're still, unfortunately, hitting it about mid-month. So at this point, you know, I'm not really sure where we can go from here, besides the unfortunate, you know, unfortunately having to do some sort of fee increase down the road. So that's where we stand currently, because it just can't keep up with the raising costs of the rising costs of titles in Cloud Library and the still popular use of the pay-per-use titles. It's kind of where we're standing. So, all right.
Right.
Yes, Cammy.
Are the audiobooks and ebooks coming out more as pay-per-use than just, hey, we own it and you only get 26 checkouts? Is that a trend, or?
So we only do the pay-per-use for audiobooks. And okay. I will say audiobooks are rising. That is something interesting I also got from my meeting with Blackstone, is that they are finding studies that say that audiobooks are seen to rise in trend by about 25% by like 2027, I think, is what they're looking at, which I don't doubt. I've seen it. Last month in August was our highest circulation of digital audiobooks in Cloud Library ever. And that didn't include PPU, audiobooks that was strictly just audiobooks that we owned in Cloud Library. So I think that that's something to consider going forward. And unfortunately, audiobooks are now also becoming one of those things where they have those restrictions on them, just as ebooks did, where we have to repurchase, and they are also more expensive typically than ebooks are. But yeah, we have a limit of 4 pay-per-use checkouts per month for patrons, and they cannot tell what's a PPU and what is an own title in Cloud Library. It's specifically set up that way. And we have a specific budget that's set right now that I can't quite remember off the top of my head, but it's over $2,000 a month. But we are hitting that amount. So once we hit it, any PPU title is just going into an automatic hold status. So it just is what it is right now. And then once they put it on hold, it goes into reserve to then become available for them when the budget resets at the beginning of the next month.
Okay.
So that's how that works.
Another just kind of a personal thing I've noticed, and I don't know if it's true. So I go to look for a title that I want to read, and it's the audiobook's there, but not necessarily an ebook. Are they stopping doing ebooks and going straight to audio instead?
Not necessarily. Sometimes it's that we have one format over the other, or maybe one format has expired and it just hasn't been repurchased yet. Or it's not available for us to purchase. For instance, Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. Anything that's like her, I think, 4th book in that series and up is not available to purchase on audiobook and anything outside of Audible right now. Audible strictly has it. So you can't get it in Libby. You can't get it in Hoopla. You can't get it in Cloud Library. It's only in Audible. So, and I don't know if the other titles are going to go that route too, like the first 3 in that series. But definitely the 4 and up are now only in Audible, only available on that platform. And it could possibly also be the same thing with some ebooks too, although I don't think that's as likely. I see it a lot more with audiobooks than I do with ebooks.
Because I'm not personally not an audiobook person. So I went and looked at this title and I'm like, it's only audiobook. I don't want it. I want to read it.
And I always say, if you have a suggestion, send it my way. Just email me and I will look and see if we can purchase it, if it's available to purchase and we can add it to the collection. So just shoot me an email and I'll take a look and see, because it could have just gotten missed. It could have expired.
Well, it wasn't Cloud Library. My home library is O'Fallon and I was using Libby. So I just happened to notice it in Libby. I'm like, oh no, I want to read it. I will find it eventually.
Understandable.
Thank you.
Any other questions? You're welcome.
Okay, thank you so much, Danielle, for the update. Okay, so I have an Aspen update, and I see that note from Laura that she says that she's so sorry. You personally, Laura, are responsible. She could not get that. No, just teasing. So I have next on our agenda is the Aspen update. I am so happy to announce that we have moved forward with the contract and we have started the implementation process. I know Troy has been working to send over information. I was actually scheduling some training sessions for our internal trainings for like Dina and our admin team today. We're going to continue getting some things put on the calendar for the first cohort for training. But would you guys like to see something? You want to see some Aspen? Let's see. Let me share my screen. Okay, can you guys see this? So here is just a brief. Now, this is not the final by any means, but I just want to just do a quick search. The Hobbit, Fantasy Classic. And so when I come to this specific, the MVPP, which is your share code, it's going to tell you all of the items that you have right here. So it's going to take you right to your library. There's an available now, and then there is the entire collection, which is going to bring out more results. So it's really easy to use. One of the things I also started with Mississippi Valley, because there's also an option to switch languages. There's more languages than just English and Spanish. That's not something that we have set up in Polaris, but we could certainly set that up in Aspen. And so let me just give this a little bit of a refresh. And then you can see over here to the left of the different formatting options, so that is very easy to switch over to the pack in Spanish. So I did want to point that out, because I know that's something that you guys at Mississippi Valley were really interested in.
We are interested in that. And I can't help but notice that, like, the top three over there in the left-hand menu didn't translate.
I saw that too. Fiction, nonfiction. Yeah.
I'll have to ask them about that. Make a note of that. Yeah, because when you're actually on the, let's go to the home, I was looking at that earlier because it did translate. So I think there's probably something that just needs to be fine tuned. Let's see here. There we go. Yeah. Okay, and so again, I just wanted to compare that with your current pack. And again, this is going to be fleshed out as we have more data to put in there, like your hours and things like that. That's not quite, it's not completed by any stretch of the imagination. I just wanted to give you a sneak preview. But here, let's do The Hobbit. And so did you notice that when you searched here, it's going to take you to exactly to the book. When you search here, that's a movie, that's a guide, CD, video, Blu-ray. Do you see here the difference of the search results just being just a lot better? And so I wanted to show that to you so you could kind of get a look at it. And again, we will be doing training. I've also, so is everybody seeing the old, to make sure that this share screen is working properly? Are you guys seeing the current pack, the All Share It site? Yes. Yep. Okay. So now let's go to Hainer. So they've got some of theirs in. We've got O'Fallon, which I love that green. And then Lakeland College. So one of the things that's really neat is they have this to search in an online collection and search for databases. You can also, I think, add to this dropdown so you can search a website. So you can index your website. That's something, it's kind of an advanced feature we'll have to get set up with any of our participants. But I think that's a really cool feature as well. So, so what do you guys think so far?
Can you do another search so I can see the search results page?
Sure. So this is for Lakeland College. And of course, this is going to be their collection first. You see here, these are the four. They have an available now button. So it looks like all of them are on the shelves.
And what happens when you click? Can you click on one of the first one?
And then, oh, this is a really interesting, the read-alikes, more like this. So there's other similar titles. And that's pulling from the entire catalog, not just your library.
Okay, now up at the top, it says the library doesn't own copies of this title, but...
For this one?
Up at See the where top, it says, not seeing... under publication date... But didn't it show up as us owning it? At least I sure thought we owned a copy of The Hobbit. If not, I need to buy one.
I'm honestly not sure. We're still working on getting our data imported in, so I'm honestly not sure. But that's why we're doing the cohort model, so that we can start using the different, our teams can start using these to do the searches. And then that way, if we see things that are wonky or needs to be corrected in the MARC record, we can start doing cleanup before we ever launch and go live. And so we'll be working on that process as we're trying to get the second cohort set up. So that is, just a little bit of the look of it. And we're going to also start to get a lot of information on how to really customize by adding those placards. So if you got events coming up, or it's, September being library card sign up month, you could put a promotion in there. So there's lots of additional bells and whistles that we can utilize this for. And we'll start really heavily customizing after we get some more of the data in and we do some of that training on our end. And then we'll have some frontline staff training as it gets closer to time. Anybody else have any questions about that? Okay. All right, then we can go ahead and go to Share Mobile Library. One of the things that we have, one of the requests that we have gotten for the Share Mobile Library is to have a all ages rating, and so right now it is 18 plus. The reason for that is because of how the data is being presented in an internal browser, and I'm probably butchering this explanation, so Troy, if I'm getting this wrong, please feel free to jump right in. That's a rule for Apple, that if there is a browser, it has to be filtered, otherwise it's got to be 18 plus. What they've said that they can do is to launch things kind of like a pop-out. So they're launching things into an external browser, which has filtering through the device. So when we do that, we can have it as a 4+ rating. And so that would encompass a lot of our schools, because right now there was some disappointment that they can't add it on their devices. They can't add that app because of the age rating, because they'd have to go to their school board to get permission. It was a whole thing. And so there were a lot of people disappointed that wasn't going to be an option. We have been working with Solus, and we have a meeting on the books with them to learn about their latest updates, and specifically for getting that changed. One of the things that we needed to do is just kind of whitelist all of the sites that we are sending out. So if somebody clicks on a link for Cloud Library, for example, it's going to take them to the Cloud Library page for what they're looking for. And so Troy and his team have been working with them to get them that data to make sure that those items are added. Anything that is already on the custom templates, so for example, you have Hoopla, those are already, I'm saying whitelisted, I'm sure there's a different term for that, for what they're doing, but those have been added as well. And so that is something that we are working to get, so we can get that changed. And so probably in the next few weeks, I would like for the committee to discuss that, if it's just okay with you, because before making a big sweeping change, I've already discussed it with the circulation committee. They made the recommendation to move forward as long as the e-resources committee was okay with it. So I would like someone to make a motion that we do make this change to adjust the age ratings.
Before we make the motion, can I ask a question?
Of course.
Okay, so how does this, so when you're saying that you make it an E4 rating, how does it change what we're seeing now? I'm not quite clear on that.
It would not change anything that you see now. It would just change how the app behaves when you're sending something to an external link.
Okay, so when you're saying, when we, like, ours is connected to, like you said, Libby and Hoopla and Cloud, when I send it there, it would make the change as far as what they're able to see.
Yes. Well, okay. Not what they're able to see, just how it's accessing that browser. Instead of being an internal browser, it's sending it to an external browser.
Okay.
It would open up in whatever their default browser is on their phone. So if they use Google or Edge, it would just pop those up in that browser instead of staying in the app. The other thing is, like, when you go to find libraries around me, it has a website there for that library, which is great. But from there, you know, you can get to other places. And that's really where the problem is, it looks like. So as long as we pop them out to an external browser that follows their rules that they've established, then we're off the hook at that point, basically, because we're giving them to another app.
Okay. So it's just a liability thing, basically. Instead of it being 18 and up as it is now, because it stays internal, we're just pushing the liability onto when they pop out of it. Exactly. And saying when you're in the app, it's 4+. When you go out, it's not up to us.
Not our problem.
Yeah. Then I would make a motion to vote. Is that what we wanted? Sorry.
Just make a motion to make that change with Solus.
I would make a motion to make that change.
Okay. Do we have a second?
This is Lauren. I can second.
Okay, thank you, Lauren. We'll go ahead and do a roll call. Kyla Waltermeyer?
Yes.
Jenna Dower?
Yes.
Lauren Irwin?
Yes.
It looks like Alyssa has had to step away. Sarah Hill?
Yes.
Cami Com?
Yes.
And Laura Picado?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Okay, so next item of business is cloud library loan periods. We talked in the share update about, you know, raising the fees and trying to get reduced holds. Another option that has been discussed has been changing the loan periods, reducing from 3 weeks to 2 weeks. And so that is something that we wanted to bring to the committee as a possibility, as well as making adjustments to the fee scale. And so I just wanted to open it up for conversation. There's obviously pros and cons of doing that.
I know I'll speak up. I'm not a fan of shortening it to 2 weeks because it takes me 3 weeks to finish audiobooks. And so this is just for my personal opinion. It doesn't match. We don't have 2 week checkout at my library either. So it doesn't match what we're doing. I'd rather wait longer for a title so that I could actually finish it while I have it checked out and not have it taken out of my loans early.
Well, and I agree with Sarah. Just because we did the, I can't remember what we called it, but the loan period that you're trying to get everybody to come together on, I would hate to then change another platform to be less than the recommended time frame. I feel like it would just set us back. I would love it to fix holds because that's an issue, but I hate to send that message that we should go back to all these different loan periods.
That's exactly what I was going to say too, Laura.
Would anybody be a proponent of making that change and want to advocate for that? Okay, well, that seemed pretty easy. Then we will, there being no change, we'll go ahead and move on to other new business. Does anybody else have any other new business? Okay, is there any other old business? Does anybody have any public comment or announcements?
Okay, I'll put out here as an announcement. For those of you who might not be following the ILA Public Policy Committee too closely, I just want to share that the legislative agenda for ILA has been set for the current year. The highest priority is trying to tackle, again, fair pricing for e-resources. The last time around, we tried to do something. We were following the Maryland law, I think it was, Massachusetts, Maryland, one of the M states. And that got shut down because it went into copyright territory, which is a federal issue. So this time round, we're working with a group that is focusing with multiple states. They're working with multiple states, and they're taking it as a state-by-state approach, working within existing state laws. So the approach that we will be taking this time around is focusing on consumer rights and fair pricing through that. So this is your kind of call to action to start campaigning with your local elected officials to have them either sign on as a sponsor, or co-sponsor, vote in favor of that bill, whatever it takes, because that's our highest legislative priority this year. And it definitely does dovetail with the work of this committee, because we've been talking about it already in this meeting about how costly these resources are compared to the average consumer. So it behooves all of us to take action on that.
I also saw, I think I saw that in the ILA announcement, that it's not just the pricing, but also the like ridiculousness of the loan, the purchase practices of, you know, limited use and things like that. So I'm really excited to see where that goes. I'm glad that they're trying to tackle that again. Okay. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it, Kyla. Oh, and Daniel says that Demon Hot Copperhead, the audiobook, when it was released was 113. Now it is over 130. Yeah, it's very, very pricey. Okay. Any other announcements? Okay. The next meeting will be Monday, March 25th at 3 p.m. And so, Kyla, I will turn it to you to say the magic words.
All right. There being no further business, the meeting is adjourned at 4:01.
Thank you, guys, everybody.
Thanks, you.